Chapter 28. I went into the cell with a paper bag full of baked sweet potatoes. The deputy locked the heavy door behind me. "How's it going, partner?" Jefferson nodded. "How do you feel?"
"I'm all right."
"I brought you a little something." Jefferson was sitting on the bunk with his hands clasped together. I put the bag beside him on the bunk and sat down. I could hear the radio on the floor against the wall, playing a sad cowboy song. I saw the notebook and the pencil on the floor next to the radio. This was my first visit since I had given him the notebook and pencil, and I could see that the lead on the pencil was worn down to the wood. I could also see that he had used the eraser a lot. We were quiet a while. "Hungry?" I asked.
"Maybe later."
"I see you've been writing." He didn't answer. "Personal? Or can I look at it?"
"It ain't nothing."
"Do you mind?" I asked.
"If you won't."
I got the notebook and came back to the bunk. The fellow on the radio was saying what a beautiful day it was in Baton Rouge. Jefferson had filled 3/4 of the first page. The letters were large and awkward, the way someone would write who could barely see. He had written across the lines instead of above them. He had used the eraser so much that in some places the paper was worn through. Nothing was capitalized, and there were no punctuation marks. The letters were thin at the beginning, but became broader as the lead was worn down. As closely as I could figure, he had written,
"I dreamt it again last night. They was taking me somewhere. I wasn't crying. I wasn't begging. I was just going with them. Then I woke up. I couldn't go back to sleep. I didn't want to go back to sleep. I didn't want dream no more."
There was a lot of erasing. Then he wrote,
"If I ain't nothing but a hog, how come they just don't knock me in the head like a hog? Starve me like a hog."
More erasing. Then,
"Man walk on 2 foots. Hogs on 4 hoofs."
The last couple of words were barely visible, because the lead had been worn down all the way to the wood. I read it over a second time before closing the notebook. I didn't know what to say to him. He was staring at the wall, his hands clasped together.
"Do you want me to bring you a pencil sharpener?" I asked after a while.
"The little ones you hold in your hand?"
"If you can find one."
"I'm sure I can," I said. "You know, Paul would have sharpened this pencil for you. He wouldn't mind." Jefferson had unclasped his hands, and now he was scraping the ends of his left fingernails with the index finger of the right hand. His fingernails were hard and purplish.
"When's Easter?"
he asked. "Tomorrow is Good Friday."
"That's when he rose?"
"No, he rose on Easter."
"That's when he died," Jefferson said to himself. "Never said a mumbling word."
"That's right.
Not a word."
"Did you talk to Reverend Ambrose when he came to visit you?" I asked Jefferson.
"Some."
"You ought to talk to him. It's good for your nannin. She wants you to talk to him."
"He told me to pray."
"Do you?"
"No."
"It would be good for your nannin." He looked at me. His eyes were large and sad and reddened.
"You think I'm going to heaven?" he asked.
"I don't know."
"You think Mr. Grope went to heaven? You think Brother Imbert went to heaven?"
"I don't know."
"Then what I'm going to pray for?"
"For your nannin."
"Nannin don't need me to help her get to heaven. She'll make it if it's up there."
"She wants you there with her, where there's no pain and no sorrow." He grinned at me, a brief cynical grin.
"You pray, Mr. Wiggins?"
"No, Jefferson, I don't." He grunted. "But then I'm lost, Jefferson," I said, looking at him closely. "At this moment, I don't believe in anything. Like your nannin does, like Reverend Ambrose does, and like I want you to believe. I want you to believe so that one day maybe I will."
"In heaven, Mr. Wiggins?"
"If it helps others down here on earth, Jefferson.
Reverend Ambrose say I have to give up what's down here. Say there ain't nothing down here on this earth for me no more. He meant possessions, Jefferson. Cars, money, clothes, things like that.